Blog Talk Radio.
And here we go.
All right, welcome to That Nerd Show, the first show of 2015. That's right, we have survived yet another year. So, I am Marcus Blake, one of your hosts. Still here, and with me as always is Brendan.
Yeah, I'm still hanging around.
And one of our guest hosts tonight, Alex Moore, the classic gamer.
Здравствуйте, hello.
Yeah. Anyway, we are, like I said, we're here for another year, and since, you know, it's our very first show of 2015, it's only right that we look back at 2014 one last time and tell you what we think was the best and the worst of things. So, you know, when it comes to, basically when it comes to movies, TVs, and comics. So, anyway, we're going to start rolling into with news and stuff like that and let you know kind of what's going on. First, we should probably mention that we do now have a due date for Daredevil on Netflix. April 10th, I believe, is what they said.
Yep.
Yeah. So basically, on the 10th of April, all you nerds can binge watch and do nothing that day, or take little breaks and do some gaming before you go back and watch another episode of Daredevil. So that'll be good. And I'm sorry. Then we got. I apologize to the audience. We've got some chatter in the back there. Is there anything on in the background with you guys? Am I the only one hearing that?
Not at my place.
I guess.
No,
I can
hear
it in the background, but I don't have anything turned on.
I guess Skynet is starting
going
to
on.
Your offer.
Let's see what's going on. Let's see if I can find out.
Well, Skynet's up to their old tricks. What can I say? Start the new year off right. Skynet knows there's a new Terminator movie coming out, and we're going to go check it out this year. Anyway, yes, getting back to news. Daredevil, fantastic. Like I said, we have a new date, and I'm very excited about this. You know, it's not like there isn't plenty of things for us to do this year, but it'll be nice to watch a TV show and that, you know, we can basically binge watch. And not have to, you know, go from week to week. That's the great thing about Netflix. Excuse me. The other interesting news, and I want to point this out about DC. I think DC TV shows is going to be the place where old cast members of Spartacus go now. So they're out of that job, and they're just going to keep casting everybody. So we finally have Spartacus himself, Liam McIntyre, who's going to be doing a role in the Flash movie. The Flash TV show. He's going to be playing the brother of the first villain from the pilot episode. So I thought that was actually kind of funny. And I'm like, how many people from Spartacus do we have now? That's four.
And it's Spartacus and Prison Break. All the alums from those shows are going to Arrow and Flash.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they're all being villains, like every one of them. Whether they're good or not on the other shows, they're villains on this show. It's just pretty funny.
And, you know, and I could see that with some of them. You know, the guy that played Asher on Spartacus, he made such a great villain there, and he's done a fantastic job and everything. And, you know, Manu Bennett, who played Crixus, who played Deathstroke, just absolutely fantastic. Liam McIntyre, I don't really know because I didn't, you know, I don't see him as a villain per se. But, you know, for having to step into the Spartacus role after Andy Woodfill died a few years ago, he did a phenomenal job as an actor, and I have no doubt that he will, you know, do fairly well on the Flash TV show. So we'll see about that. Anyway, and here's a question that gets posed for the start of the new year now that they're starting to drop dates for movies in 2016, even though I know it's over a year away now. But is three X-Men movies too much, too many movies for 2016? Thank you, IGN, for posing that question, and I've had some time to think about it. And my answer is yes and no. No on the front of I'd like to see these movies. Yes, the fact that you cast Channing Tatum as Gambit and you want to give him a standalone movie. So I think we can just be done with that personally.
Why did they do that to me? I mean, give me. I'm just gonna have to when the Gambit movie comes out, I'm just gonna have to sit on my couch and hopefully by then the Deadpool DVD is already out and I can just go home and sit on my couch and watch Deadpool on Blu-ray over and over again and forget that Channing Tatum is Gambit.
Yeah.
Maybe if I close my eyes long enough and I can just kind of forget that it's him, if he can do a good enough voice or accent, and I can pretend it's someone else.
No, I'm still going to hear him. Like, there's a reason why he got killed off in the first 5 minutes of G.I. Joe 2. Okay.
I had a similar experience when I watched Side Effects.
So.
We were supposed to cover that on this show, and I don't mind telling our audience I skipped that on purpose because he was in it. I don't care if he wasn't in the movie very long. It's the fact that he was in the movie, and I'm just not going to subject our audience to that. So, and it's making it very hard to, want to go and see Jupiter Ascending because I love the directors and the creators of this movie. And everybody else in it, it looks like it's, they're pretty good. But it's like, ugh.
Yeah, you see him in with eyeshadow and mascara, of all things. Jupiter ascending, interest declining.
What was that movie? You know what that reminds me of? That movie about the glam rock. It had Jonathan Rhys Meyers and Christian Bale in it, and Ewan McGregor.
No, I don't remember.
Velvet Goldmine.
I probably blocked that out for a reason.
Christian Bale kind of plays the obsessive fan who, dresses up like Freddie Mercury most of the movie. And while, it was kind of an interesting music movie, it's also like taking you to some Brokeback Mountain type of places that I just didn't really feel comfortable going to, per se. And that's kind of how I think of Channing Tatum wearing eyeshadow in Jupiter Ascending. So, anyway. That's really kind of the biggest news that's gone on so far with movies and TV. The second round of shows will be coming back here shortly. We could give you some news on Gotham and talk about Easter eggs and spoilers and blah, blah, blah. But really, at the end of the day, we just don't care. And
I tried to give that show a chance, and I gave it the first half of the season, and then this is how I realized I just don't care about that show. I tried to watch the season premiere today on Hulu, and I couldn't bring myself to click play. I had other things to do.
Yeah,
I don't know what they were, but I found something else to do.
I generally have this – I have this rule that if Firefly alum is in a show, I'm going to check out the show, regardless of whether it's something that I would normally watch because of them. So, Morena Baccarin, being in this episode, absolutely. I'm willing to check that out. But – and I mean a very big but. I just – I'm sorry. That's where I draw the line. I can't do it. And I've still got fans and friends and all that telling me that I need to give it a chance and it really is good and and I'm like how can you stand a show where Bruce Wayne is 13 and he's not really Batman? I mean,
I tried, I gave it a good shot. I'm pretty sure I'm done with it.
Well,
I'm pretty sure I'm pissed off that they canceled frickin' Almost Human for this garbage.
What were you saying, Alex?
That's like this whole concept of Gotham, that'd be like having a prequel to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but it's just the rats and the turtles in the sewer before they're hit by the mutagen.
Yeah.
The prequel, a talking rat plays with his turtles in the bowl.
It's just unnecessary. And I'm sorry, but they shoehorned Jada Pinkett Smith in there to put Jada Pinkett Smith's name on it. She is awful in that show.
Yeah.
The character's bad. She's bad. The dialogue's bad.
She can only play one character. That's the problem. I mean, pretty much.
I don't think she's really been good since A Different World. Yeah. And, yeah, I did pull out
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I did pull out an old school reference on that one.
So, anyway.
Now, there is one thing that we have always done on this show, and we will continue to do in 2015. We're not going to lie to you if something is bad. We're not going to steer you to go see it just because the studios want you to go see it. If it's bad, we're going to tell you it's bad. And
we don't get paid money for our reviews like IGN and other places, so we're not beholden to anybody. We're not going to give it a 7 just because.
No, if we've given it a number, that's because, you know,
it's earned.
We really
it.
Have. And you know what? We're going to get into some of our reviews earlier in the show. You know, we've kind of stayed away from actually having really low reviews on some things because we're almost afraid of, you know, if we give something a 1, you know, we're not going back. However, or, you know, if we give it a 1, it's just going to be too traumatic and we don't know how to deal with it. However, our young book reviewer, Becca Stepanian, who has no problem giving books a 1 and telling you if they suck. And I want to compliment her on that. I was reading some of her reviews again not too long ago, and I was like, wow, she like really tore into this author and stuff. And as an author, I'm like, I don't know if I want – I'm almost afraid to give her my work. She has no problem throwing the gauntlet down. Anyway.
You have to really hate something to give it a 1. Like, really
I know,
hate it.
I mean –
Actually, I don't have to really hate it. If something leaves me utterly ambivalent, I will give it a 1. Because if it was so bad I just didn't care, like if it evoked no emotion, if I hated something so much that it evoked the emotion hate, I will give it credit for at least doing that. But
yeah.
if you garnered no emotional response from me whatsoever, then it was terrible. On a level that was so bad, I went numb.
What
yeah.
did you think? Have you ever seen that movie, The Room, from 2003? Well, I mean, what was your reaction to that?
Pretty ambivalent.
You know what? I could care less when it first came out, but since they like to play it week after week at the Inwood Theater here in Dallas for their midnight movie, like every other week, please stop. Now you're just torturing people. Come on.
It's plenty of great classic good. It's so bad it's good.
Well, you say potato, I say potato. Anyway. Like I said, that's pretty much what's going on in movie and TV news this week. But I do have one big announcement, which will lead into our next round of news. We have not done enough gaming coverage on this show, and that stops as of 2015. So we will be actually doing whether it's a week or every other week, one show dedicated entirely to gaming. Excuse me, talking about companies, hopefully interviewing developers, and telling you what we've been playing here lately. So if you listen to our E3 show, or as I like to call it, the Brendan Smith show about gaming, because I really didn't say a whole lot that day. And I like to hear the sound of my voice, so I've gotten up to speed here on gaming and stuff, and actually found my love of video games again. Now that I have a gaming center in my office where I'm broadcasting right now. But anyway, We will be doing a lot more gaming coverage and really doing some walkthroughs. You may see some videos of us playing different things, of stuff that's coming out. But at the same time, we will actually be starting our series about classic gaming systems as well. So next week will be our first gaming roundup on that Nerd Show, an entire show dedicated to gaming. And, of course, we will talk about the best games of 2014 and what we're going to be looking forward to in 2015, especially with some new releases that are going to be here in the next 3 weeks, including the new Saints Row game, which will be interesting. But with that said, is there any gaming news this week or from last week that you'd like to report, Brendan?
I just want to go over some of the games that are coming out soon. I know we got, in February, we got The Order 1886, which is a PlayStation exclusive, which looks really cool. It's basically Gears of War-style combat, but with a Victorian... It's a steampunk game set in the Victorian era, so it's an alternate universe, England, Victorian era England, and basically hundreds of years before humanity split into two different races, humans and then monsters, and the Industrial Revolution came about not to enrich humanity or make people richer, but to help them design better weapons to fend off the monsters. And you play one of the Order of the Round Table, which has been around since Arthurian times, that was created to fight these monsters, and you take on one of the names of the original knights, so you're like the 10th Percival or whatever. It looks like a very interesting game, comes out in February. Another big PlayStation exclusive comes out in March is Bloodborne from Software, and they did Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 and some other things that are really, really good. And then Mortal Kombat 10 comes out in April, which looks amazing for all platforms. And then major spoiler, if you don't want to know this, do not listen for the next 20 seconds. Ready? Go. Okay. The new Batman, you've been warned, the new Batman Arkham Knight game is coming out this summer. On Amazon in the UK, they posted a picture of the collector's edition. In it, there is a statue of the Gotham Knight, and on the plaque it said, in memory of the Gotham Knight from a grateful city. So it looks like, and they removed it real quick, but it looks like they're going to kill off Batman, or he's going to fake his own death and retire at the end of this video game. So this will be the last of the Arkham series.
Well, even though it's kind of a spoiler, I'll admit that I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, when you're trying to do trilogies and all that, and I'd like to think that they're not, like other gaming companies, just trying to milk it for all it's worth. I mean, I love Assassin's Creed, but how many games do we need in that series?
Assassin's Creed is your new Call of Duty. It's going to have, like last year it actually had two games. Had one for the old console, Rogue, and one for the new console with Unity. So you're going to get to see much more Assassin's Creed in the future, just like you'll see a new Call of Duty and a new Battlefield every year. So,
yeah,
just the way it is.
Yay!
The big production companies have got their staple franchises that they crank out a new game where they change one little thing, and people buy it, and that's how they stay afloat and make other games that aren't quite so... you know, it's how the little games get made, basically.
Right. Well, like I said, it will be interesting to see what happens, you know, with the new Batman. But it is one of the ones that we are very excited to be able to play and see what happens with it.
Is there a chance that Batman game could be divided into two games and the whole ending of the Grateful City and the statue could be a prelude to a sequel of a sequel or something?
Possible, but not likely. They generally don't do that with video games. If anything, they're probably going to do something where they might jump ahead and do a similar game style, but jump ahead and do a Batman Beyond with an older Bruce and Batman has been considered dead for years, and Terry McGinnis becomes the new Arkham Knight.
So kind of like what they did with Metal Gear. Sort of.
Yeah, but Metal Gear, I don't really get into talking to him too much because their stories are so bonkers, batshit crazy. It just, I mean, after the ending of Metal Gear 2, I stopped really paying attention to anything that Hideo Kojima writes because you need to be on acid to understand it.
Maybe that's the entire idea. Here's a game that you can play on drugs, and it's fun. Well, it'll be an exciting year for games, and I do agree about the Mortal Kombat, which we're going to probably have some special promotions coming up with that since I think all three of us.
That's just the first half year of the games, and I haven't even gotten into the Xbox stuff that's coming out. That's just mostly PlayStation stuff. But, I mean, towards the end of the year, I mean, the game, it's going to just go off the wall crazy.
We will have some new gaming bloggers for our division starting next week, and there's a lot more Xbox reviewers than, well, people that play on Xbox than I anticipated. And they're all like telling me, "Oh yeah, we can't wait for this," and you know, just tell us when. Do we get a free copy? I'm like, wow, hold up there, Roger. You know, we'll get into it. But I love the enthusiasm by everybody. You know, and the anticipation for stuff. So, Halo makes me want to buy an Xbox, but then I don't buy an Xbox. And just
Halo 5 is coming out at the end of the year, so.
Yeah,
I would buy. Honestly, if I have the chance, I'm buying an Xbox. If I, you know, find a decent employment and have the money at the end of the year, I'm buying an Xbox and I'm playing Halo 5 over Call of Duty because Call of Duty sucks. I'm sorry, I can't stand Call of Duty anymore.
Well,
I've given up on that franchise. I know Advanced Warfare is supposed to be pretty good and it's got Kevin Spacey and all that, but I just. Yeah.
Hey,
I'm done.
And thank God for the show tonight because I did take a break from it. I'll say that, but I'll be saving my reviews for Call of Duty next week. Yeah, you have to kind of take a day. Also, wanted to point out there was an earthquake in Dallas yesterday, apparently, and I didn't feel it, or maybe I did, and I just thought it was Call of Duty. Could go either way.
There's actually like 8 earthquakes in Dallas yesterday, and I only felt one of them. I felt really cheated, actually.
And that is this week's sign of the apocalypse. Sad.
All
right.
And I was in Fort Worth. We didn't feel anything at all. So on the other side of the...
we're going to kick off the end of the year review by reviewing a movie. Actually, we're going to talk about Alex's latest review on A Most Violent Year, which came out at December 31st is when the actual day came out. It was kind of weird when they did the day because I thought it was supposed to be coming out this week, and I don't know. We saw it like over a month ago at a press screening, and usually when we do our screenings, it's the same week that the movie is coming out. So, but anyway, I did want to do, a quick review on it and talk about it. First and foremost, I thought it was a great little review that you did, but I do have to disagree with you. I personally can't give it a 7. I got to give it an 8. I liked it. I really did. And I did not think it was drawn out in any way. You know, and we were talking about this after the screening and having a nice little round table at the Angelica Theater with all the other critics. But I thought the movie did well. Was one of the better movies with Jessica Chastain in it, and she didn't completely annoy me. Some movies she does. But Oscar Isaac, who is quickly turning into one of my, you know, favorite actors, you know, and I get away from stuff like Sucker Punch with Zack Snyder, like, yeah, that isn't. But I look for other things. Like, I thought he played a great King John, you know, in the Ridley Scott's Robin Hood and the Coen Brothers movie, Inside Llewellyn Davis, I thought was fantastic. But this one, he had very much had this Michael Corleone, you know, feel to everything, and it did. It felt to me, it's like it was a mixture of Mean Streets and Goodfellas and Godfather and just, you know, gritty kind of crime drama and, you know, trying to find honor in the things that you do, you know, within New York City. So I personally have to give it 8 out of 10 and just loved it. And I loved the music. You know, nothing like that good kind of classic rock, but at the same time, mixture of big band type stuff and Sinatra and all of that. You know, it's almost like taking a page out of Martin, you know, Scorsese's director's book with the film. But figured we'd start with that one. And you're giving it a 7 because you just can't, you know, didn't feel like it was worthy of something being good or anything. Just an okay movie for you.
Well, see, for me, I was sitting on a fence for a while on that because there was a part of me I thought, well, maybe I can kind of go up to an 8, but because I was so undecided about it, I decided to just kind of stick with a 7 because the first thing I thought when people were asking me how it was, I just said, well, it was pretty good. I just couldn't quite say it was, you know, really good. And, you know,
right.
I thought, you were talking about the music, and the first thing I thought of was sort of the ambient style of music that reminded me of, say, the movie Heat, which was, you know, from 1996 and had
another good one,
similar,
yeah.
Very similar feel to it. It's just very eerie and kind of melodic as far as the tone, and it really worked well with setting the tone for the film. And, you know, the use of sound effects, you know, you hear the runner breathing and panting with a dark screen, and you hear the music coming in, and it fades in. And there is just really a New York feel sort of from the 80s. You look at the poster and the lettering and the style looks very much like something from 1980 or 81. And, you know, we talked about the similarities to, say, Corleone from The Godfather when you see his shadow when he's standing in the doorway, and it just is such a resemblance to that. But I think what they're trying to show you is that there are similarities, but then there's a difference to it. He's not Italian, he's Latino. And so he's from New York, but it's a slightly different side of New York from what you're maybe typically used to seeing. And
right.
I felt like the secondary cast, you know, with Jessica Chastain and Alessandro Nivola and David Oyelowo, who's actually from Britain and has been seen around in some movies. I saw him in Lee Daniels' The Butler a year ago and thought he was outstanding as the son
right.
of the butler. And he's going to be making a very big starring role in the upcoming film where he's going to play the part of Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
So I think that this guy has a bright future. I think he's going to be a big star. And Albert Brooks, you know, has always kind of been great as kind of playing a very low-key kind of role. And he reminded me a lot of kind of like what he did in, say, Taxi Driver in the 70s. So there were a lot of things about it that felt very much like a throwback film. And I thought that was very effective. I had a lot of good things to say about this, but I just felt like when it came down to the main character and it came time for him to sort of carry the film, that he just didn't quite carry it as well as the other scenes where there's other characters involved. And I don't necessarily think it's Oscar Isaac's fault. I think he played the role the way he was supposed to. But because of that type of character and the way he presents himself in the film, I think that makes it harder for that character to stand alone and sort of be the focal point by himself for that center part of the film.
Right. Well, and you know, there's something that we don't talk about often enough, that when you have a movie with a great cast, you know, a lot of great actors and everything, you know, you're used to seeing a film where you know who your main star is in. They're supposed to overshadow everybody because they're the main star. But when it's such a great cast, if your main guy can get overshadowed quite a bit. And I think having people like Albert Brooks in there and stuff, you don't have just one headliner, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And it can make it, it's different. And it it's not like you said that Oscar Isaac did a bad job. It's just I don't know if it's as noticeable because of everything, because of the surroundings and everybody else that you have, you know. But you know, for me, just because you're talking about a very real issue, and you know, anybody that kind of knows the history of what was going on in New York at the time, you know, cutthroat businesses and you know, trying to survive and trying to be honest and all that, that's, to me, that's very Shakespeare. How do you remain honorable in that kind of business and be able to, you know, live your dreams and do the things that you want to do without getting your hands dirty a little bit, especially as a business owner with competition? You know, it's very nearly impossible. So, but like I said, it's just, to me, he was one of the better films of the year, and because of the, you know, I do give it an 8. So, but I got to give you a hard time. It's just, you know, I know you want to give it an 8, but, you know, you're just like, And you and I are going to debate later once we get to my indie pick of the year, because I'm still kind of on the fence of that one. I've been debating that one for a while, and I'm just like, I don't want to make a choice. Why can't they all be great?
Well, here's the funny thing about film reviews. You know, you look at, say, a site like Rotten Tomatoes, for instance, and you see that the percentage of those who approve of it is very high. But then you look at the average overall rating, and it may not be quite as high. If you give something a 6 out of 10, they consider it fresh. So according to them, I approve of the film, even though there are other movies I thought were way better. But then overall, it's like, well, he approved of it. So that, and then that mix of people who said it's a good movie. And so overall, it looks like it's great because its approval rating is so high. But you kind of have to take a little bit closer look under the microscope and see exactly, specifically, what rating people are giving it. But, you know, this movie, yeah, I think, was already getting some pretty steady notoriety before it was even released. And it could be one of those sleeper films that kind of gets some headway and builds some momentum going into the Oscar season. So I wouldn't be surprised if The Most Violent Year does get some attention when it comes to the award times. So.
Well, and it should. You know, good drama like that always should. You know, best pictures, things like that, shouldn't be obvious answers. Now, I do realize that some years you got to have, you know, the feel-good movies win, like Slumdog Millionaire. Not saying it wasn't a good movie. Liked the cast. But it's like, well, sometimes I think every once in a while you have those movies that become best picture because, you know, It's a Wonderful Life got overlooked in 1946, even though it was nominated because, you know, nothing was going to beat out the best years of our lives about the returning veterans from World War II. But, you know, it's like a slavery movie that's really horrific and all that. It's like, well, we kind of have to give it to this movie because it's touching on a subject. And, you know, and if we don't, then we're just kind of racist. But indie movies, sleepers, that's the stuff that I think that should get those kinds of awards, you know, because, again, it's not obvious. So I'm not saying The Most Violent Year is the best picture of the year, but definitely worth talking about. So, all right, since we're nerds, we're just going to jump right into talking about comic book TV shows and then comic book movies. We're gonna start with what we like and what we don't like. As for comic book TV shows, we had a lot more come out this in 2014. You know, we don't just have to stick to like one or two of them. However, I'm going to go ahead and personally say it, despite all the newcomers, and I do love Flash, love Constantine, I don't see anybody beating Arrow. I think Arrow is still literally the best comic book TV show on TV, hands down.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially if you're talking about the whole year, because you had the second half of season 2, which was amazing. But the first half of season 3 felt really disjointed until the last couple of episodes. So I'm interested to see where the second half of season 3 goes. I thought the first half of Flash was really strong. If you're taking just the first half of this last season, I actually think Flash is a little bit better than Arrow. Just this first, these, you know, 10 episodes or whatever. Obviously, the season 2 of Arrow was just another level. But and I really like Constantine, and it's just a shame that nobody's supporting it and it's not getting any viewers because it's actually really well done. So
yeah.
The only one I hated this year was Gotham. I can't. I mean, if we're doing the best and worst, there we go, okay? Arrow, Flash, Constantine, and then at the very bottom, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, is Gotham. So,
well, see, and that's the thing. As much as I like Flash, I'm going to throw Constantine at number 2 just because of how well done I think it is and how much I like that sort of thing. It's nothing against the Flash. I love it being in the same universe, and I love the crossover episodes and stuff. But for just as a personal fan, Constantine is much more of a beloved character in the DC universe than the Flash is. Because the Flash has always been like, hey, I can run fast. Yay! But
well, I wouldn't go there. Flash is a tier one character. I know. Constantine's not.
I understand. I'm just saying that for me personally, I like Constantine better than I like the Flash. You know, Superman and Batman are always going to be the two main guys in the DC universe. And there's very good dividing points on what you like and what you don't like. We've had this discussion for years. Batman's your favorite, Superman's my favorite. Even though I really love Batman, you know. But Arrow is much more exciting than the Flash is, and who the fuck gives a care about Aquaman? Although I will see the Jason Momoa movie as him as Aquaman. Could care less about Wonder Woman, but some of the second tier characters, you know, like Constantine, I think they're just so much more interesting. And the fact that they brought this show out, and I think it gets a really good pairing with Grimm, even though it's on a Friday night. And I agree with you. It's a shame that people aren't supporting it. And maybe it's because it needs to be something, you know, on Netflix or TNT or something like that, where it can actually get, you know, better viewership or something. But for me, that's my second one. So, although Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, you know, still somewhat entertaining, but I can go weeks without watching an episode and don't feel like I've missed anything and then, like, binge watch it and be okay. Or as I like to call it, get my filler in between movies.
Do you feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has just gone way too mainstream to a degree?
Yeah. No, I think it's gotten better. I really think that before the Winter Soldier, it had no identity. It was just like the weird case of the week serial, and it was just blah. After the Winter Soldier reintroduced Hydra, and it actually gave them an enemy and a focal point, I think it really started to click into work. Now that they're introducing the Inhumans, which are going to be a movie on their own, that's really, really cool. And so now you have two actual Avengers from the comic books that are on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., both Mockingbird and Quake. The other thing is there is a rumor that Hawkeye just went in to film some more stuff. What's the actor? Jeremy Renner. He just went in to film more stuff as Hawkeye. Well, all the photography for Ultron is well past done. So a lot of people, and there are people saying that there's going to be an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tie in to Avengers, like just like there was for Winter Soldier.
Right.
So a lot of people are thinking Hawkeye is now going to have a spot on Avengers this year, which would be very cool. Which would also explain why they're doing a big 10-episode break and doing Agent Carter in between the middle of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season, because, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you would think would be coming back, you know, in January. But now it's not going to come back until March, which means it'll be going at the same time as Avengers in May. So that could be very interesting. I actually like where they're finally headed with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. For a very long time, I'd actually completely given up on that show, and I still haven't seen about 8 episodes from the first season just because I don't think there's a point to it.
I think you can pretty much Yeah, you could start watching it in April, how it ties into Captain America 2, and be done with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like everything else, you maybe watch the first two episodes, just figure out who the characters are, and then skip ahead to the second half of the season, because other than that, you really don't need any of those first like 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah. Now, we don't have a review for you yet on Agent Carter. We will probably have a blog review on that. But I'll be quite honest with you, I did not watch it. And it's still kind of getting into my gripes about prequels. Nothing against Peggy Carter and, you know, Haley Atwell and stuff like that. She does a great job with it. But I'm just like, outside of Captain America, I don't really care, you know. Maybe if there's like some short films explaining how S.H.I.E.L.D. came about after Captain America, that would be fantastic. But I don't need a 10 episode, you know, with a 2-hour premiere or anything like that. Besides, as good looking as she is, even in a 40 style and stuff, if I just watch her for 2 hours for that reason, I'm just a pervert. So. But that's
you're
fine.
Not.
Well, I am, but I'm just trying to say I've got. I want, you know, I kind of. I'd like to watch Nyssa a little bit more from Arrow, because I'm a big Katrina Law fan. And
who isn't?
Yeah, exactly. You endeared yourself to so many nerds from Spartacus in so many ways. So anyway, all right. You know, used to when you talk about comic book movies, you maybe had like one a year, and that would be like your best and the worst. But we're in the golden age, so now we have more than one of comic book movies. You know, we had X-Men: Days of Future Past, we had Captain America 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so you get a lot more that you can choose from. Especially
there weren't really any
Marvel
clunkers this year.
No,
we didn't have your X-Men Origins Wolverine. We didn't have X3. We didn't have Fantastic Four. You know, we didn't have any real clunkers, and I'm pretty impressed by that.
There wasn't one of those movies that I hated. I've watched all of them more than once. Some more, you know, more than that. But absolutely, I think they were good. But if I have to pick and choose, you know, the best one in my mind is going to be Guardians, just for the simple fact that I was so surprised about how good it was, and it seemed like everything worked on it. You know, and then after that, I got to pick Captain America 2, and then I got to pick X-Men. That's kind of how I rate the three big ones. Guardians is my personal favorite.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, and that's not to say that X-Men was bad, because it was very good. It's just the other two were a little bit better.
Yeah.
And for me, I kind of would put them in the same order, and the reason why for me is because I just don't like how they made that ending to the X-Men film just so they could kind of make more movies. I just thought that was a bit forced and just kind of arbitrary somehow.
Well, it wasn't just so they could make more movies, it's so they could ignore the crap that was X3 and X-Men Origins. You know, they completely rewrote the timeline, and people were clamoring for that because of how bad X3 and X-Men Origins were. Of course, then they compounded the problems and made things worse, because now we have Channing Tatum as Gambit instead of Tyler Klitsch. But, you know, hey, give them an A.
They're not going to get all of them right.
So,
well, look, Brian Singer, which we haven't heard anything about because he's, you know, got filled with controversy. You know, he had a few Bill Cosby moments of himself. And, ooh, yeah, I did actually go there on this show. Too soon? But anyway.
Too late.
Yeah.
Maybe
oh,
so,
well.
Yeah.
I'll never look at Pudding Pops or Jell-O Pudding ever again, you know, the quite the same way. Anyway, Brian Singer said he was going to fix, you know, X-Men 3, and he did. So, good for you. And, you know, if we get good movies from this, I'm okay with that. But then again, you cast Channing Tatum as Gambit, and I don't have a lot of confidence in you anymore, buddy. Or the studio.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and let's not forget what Fox is doing to Fantastic Four. That just I mean,
we haven't even seen it. We already know we're going to rate it bad.
It's just like they've already ordered a sequel. It's like somebody put out a great line on IGN because they're like, "Did you hear Fantastic Four? Or that Fox already ordered a sequel to Fantastic Four?" It's like they don't know that it's going to bomb. They're so cute.
You almost think that they're making this movie just to make the first two that they had seem a whole lot better and, you know, boost DVD sales. Like it's an investment to get the DVD sales up on these other two movies.
It's like, you know, okay, first of all, I think the idea of changing Johnny Storm's race without changing the race of his sister is pretty stupid. But I can overlook that just as long as you didn't ruin Victor Von Doom. Oh, too late. Yeah, you completely destroyed Victor Von Doom. He's some whiny hacker now. I mean, it's just like, what are you doing? It's like, Fox,
Well,
back away from the dish. You're like a fat kid at a freaking Chinese buffet. You don't know when to stop.
So I'm going to go ahead and predict that I think Avengers 2 will be the peak of comic book movies. I think it'll be all downhill from there. I don't think that you'll ever be able to top what you've already done and that we have
I
to
disagree.
Start spending.
I disagree because I don't think it's going to – I think we'll have some that aren't as good, but I don't think the peak, the absolute peak, is going to be the culmination of the entire storyline, which is going to be Avengers 3 and 4, which is the Infinity War.
I know, and I'm not – saying anything about the story. I'm just saying that you have to get to a top point where everything kind of starts to go down, even though you may have good films, but that's your pinnacle right there. That is the way that we're rolling out comic book movies so much now that it's like you're going to have bad ones, and the sequels, can you really expect them to make them better? I'm excited for the Infinity Wars.
I think Thor Ragnarok is going to be better than Thor 2, and I like Thor 2. And I think Civil War, especially if they get Spider-Man, is going to be amazing. I've been waiting for Doctor Strange forever. I've been waiting for Black Panther forever. The Inhumans is going to be cool. I agree. I think there will be a peak, but I think the peak will be the Infinity War. Once they move into Marvel Phase 4, I think that's when you're going to see it go downhill. That's when it's going to start to ebb.
I hope I'm wrong. I am. Absolutely, I hope I'm wrong. But, you know,
Once you get through Phase 3, you've already done Civil War, you've already done Ragnarok, you've already done the Infinity War. A lot of these actors are getting older. You're going to have to move on to different characters. I think that's it right there. The Infinity War, and then it's honestly, I don't know what Marvel's going to do after that.
Well, we're going to see. We'll see what happens. But I think we've got our best and our worst when it comes to comic book movies. As you know, the big ones when it comes to fantasy movies, really there's only one taker, and you know it would be the final Hobbit movie. And I thought it was pretty damn good for what it was. And you know I'm gonna miss taking trips back into Middle Earth, even though they make us wait an entire year to see a damn sequel. But I'm definitely very, very, you know, very pleased with everything. Now, because we can go on forever on this show, before we get to the indie pick of the year, I want to talk about, like, the absolute, like, worst of the worst, you know, when it comes to everything. And I personally think that Alex and I had the had a very big treat by seeing the worst movie of the year, and it's actually, believe it or not, been the lowest rated movie review we've ever given. So, without further ado,
so far,
I personally, I'm just saying. I don't. Well, okay. I think Left Behind with Nicolas Cage is absolutely the worst movie of the year. There is, like, no redeeming quality of that movie whatsoever. It's just awkward. The pacing's off. Everybody sucks in it. Well, Chad Michael Murray was the only reason it didn't end up in the one. He was actually pretty good. But everybody else was horrible. And it was rated a 3 by this show. Now, that's kind of, you know, tough for me to say because this was the year that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out by Michael Bay. And, you know, the whole genesis of how that nerd show started was us complaining about Michael Bay being involved in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was exactly what we thought the movie was going to be. Absolutely horrible and no redeeming quality whatsoever.
The best thing I can say about the entire movie is I only saw one explosion. Michael Bay as producer, not director, showed incredible restraint. Mainly because
right.
somebody else was in the director's chair telling him, "No, Michael, we don't need an explosion here for no reason."
Right. But Alex, what would you say would be the worst movie of the year?
I don't think I can disagree with you on that choice. You know, I usually am pretty careful about the movies I go see, and so I generally do not pick bad movies. But when you get assignments, it kind of leaves the door open, and I think that's kind of fun because you need to see bad movies every once in a while. And
right.
From the moment that movie started, everything about it, you know, the music sounded very cheap. The editing was terrible. It may have been the worst editing I've seen all year. The action sequences made no sense because you didn't expect it to be an action film, so that seemed out of place. There was
right.
hardly any. There was rarely any connection to the book itself, or even for the original movie. And when the original movie was not even a theatrical film and yet was better than this one, you know that that's not a good sign.
Right.
And you're talking about a director who the only thing you know him for is being a stunt double, a body double for Harrison Ford with the Indiana Jones movies. So I just think there was a lack of experience with this film as far as who was making the film. Yes, Nicolas Cage was in the movie, but that's really just to get some star quality in the film. And Nicolas Cage is very hit or miss with a lot of his movies, especially nowadays. And
I think it's better to say Nicolas Cage is exactly the same in every movie. It just depends on how good the script, cast, and director around him is.
Right.
It's certainly possible.
Well...
There's always something I've liked about him, though. So, I mean, regardless of that, so.
Oh, he's crazy and a lot of fun. He just needs a lot of things around him to make
but
it
there was,
worthwhile
there was
viewing.
There was really nothing to like in that movie. It was laughable. It would have made a great MST3K episode if they were still, you know, they should do a riff track on that one. That'd be perfect.
There would be. We are starting to wind down, and we are very big about talking about indie movies on this show, especially with covering film festivals, which we will do again this year, and very much looking forward to Dallas Film Festival. So I've been torn about this for a while now, and I think there's a lot of great indie films from the film festival, stuff like Copenhagen, which we interviewed the director, and of course Locke with Tom Hardy, which was very interesting. But I think there's three big indie movies that I think kind of, you know, take the cake and deciding on which one is best and worst. Bill Murray's St. Vincent, and Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley in Begin Again, and then, of course, Jon Favreau's directorial debut with Chef. And like I said, you know, just been kind of torn on which one I think is the best. I could easily go with Bill Murray and St. Vincent because it's the best movie he's done in 10 years, but that's too easy. It was very much a great film, and I think people should check it out. I got to actually go with Chef, and the only reason I'm even going to do this is I really loved the movie Begin Again because of the musical aspect of it. I thought it was great all the way around, loved the soundtrack and stuff, and I'm very big about music movies. You know, as an Irishman, one of my all-time favorite movies in dealing with music is Once, which, you know, was a sleeper hit about eight years ago. With Glenn Harsnett, who's the lead singer of The Frames, it was also in The Commitments. But Chef, about a guy finding his passion about what he loves and the mixture of music, just like by an inch, gets over the top of Begin Again with me as the best indie movie of the year. And the fact that I've watched both of those movies like three times each just to see what I feel when I watch those movies, yeah, I got to give Chef just by an inch. That's how I'm rating the best indie movie of the year. What do you think, Alex, being the classic nerd that you are?
I'm glad that you came around. I had told you before you saw Chef that you were going to be having second thoughts. No, I would not have given you any issues if you had decided that Begin Again was your pick, because it was a solid film. But to me, what makes Chef stand out is that, you know, with Begin Again, there are certain expectations you have with the movie because it's a film about music. But then with Chef, it's not about music, but the music is outstanding. The use of music throughout the film, it's a little bit more predictable, I admit. It's not as creative as it was in, say, Begin Again. But the heartwarming aspects of just, you know, a father who's trying to make things better with his ex-wife and his son who he's estranged from, and this great adventure they go on. It's not your typical adventure at all, but just the offhanded jokes and the wonderful scenes and moments just between all the characters. I did have a chance to see it a second time, and I was so glad I did, because, you know, you watch it again and you see things you didn't see before, and, you know, just the attention to detail in that film was so good, and you just knew that Favreau had put a lot of energy into that film, and he had spent a lot of time really making sure that he got it right, and
everything from the cast to, you know, it's a passion project, you know. And the more people I talk to, you know, have just kind of fallen in love with that movie. So I do agree with you on all that. I can't debate you or disagree. You know, all I can tell you is, you know, my one reasoning why it gets past an inch and stuff. But, you know, as being a beer brewer, you know, I thought for a couple of months, ooh, what would be great with brewing with this beer, and how do you match food and all that? And we actually, you know, friends, you know, we all talked about it actually one night at the pub. Like we do all the time. So, but yes, I definitely think it was, you know, a great, great film. And, you know, kudos to Jon Favreau for that movie. And I hope that he has another great movie like that again. So, we got a couple of minutes left here, so we're going to kind of wind this down. I'm going to tell you a couple of sponsors. And first and foremost, one of our sponsors, TrueSource. You've been best-rated print company in Dallas, and you can get yourself a pair of free business cards or get yourself 500 free business cards with your first order. Go to mytruesource.com. Also, another one of our sponsors, because we're going to be telling you a lot more about them, is Warrior Point. And in about 20 seconds, tell our audience what Warrior Point is, Brendan.
Warrior Point's a new veterans organization. We've been around for a couple of years now, and our goal is to stop veteran suicides. 23 veterans every day commit suicide in this country. If you're a veteran and you're looking for some camaraderie or the sense of purpose that you lost since you've gotten out of the military, and the VFW or the American Legion isn't doing it for you, go to warriorpoint.org. That's point with an E, WARRIORPOINTE.org. You can also email me directly through the show, and I'll get you all the information on it.
Okay. All right, so we will be back next week with our first gaming roundup, like I mentioned in the show. What was great about 2014 and what we're looking forward to in 2015. But in the meantime, stay nerdy. We will be back. It's going to be a great year for nerds, and we're going to be right there covering everything. Thanks, Alex and Brendan, for being on the show tonight. And we are out of here.
Adios.
Play more games.